Before he took off to where no one has gone before on TV and the big screen, Frakes played another legendary hero, Captain America. However, it was in a much less glamorous setting.
That was one of my first jobs. I used to go over to 525 Madison Avenue, the home of Marvel Comics, and Stan Lee's entourage sent my buddy Charlie Davis, who played Spider-Man, and I out with these costumes that we had to sign out. And we get on a flight to Omaha, Nebraska, and go open a couple of comic book stores and 7-Elevens and ride in on the hood of some rental car that an Andy Frame hired security guy for $5 an hour was driving. And I'd hold the garbage can lid that was meant to be the Captain America shield. We'd ride into the parking lot of 7-Eleven. Those are the good old days. During the same era, we were invited to the White House. Stan Lee, the Hulk, Spider-Man, Captain America, et cetera. And we appeared at the Rosalyn and Amy Carter environmental lawn party at the White House.
As Captain America?
As Captain America.
That is too awesome. There's got to be a picture of that someplace.
Oh, yeah. You can find that.
Well, let's go up a few years. How'd you get involved with Star Trek?
Star Trek, I auditioned for 7 times over 6 weeks and wore the same shirt to each audition. So by the end of that 2 months, that shirt was pretty rank.
You did not wash it between times?
I was a little superstitious, like a baseball player. I was pretty sure that was my sci-fi shirt, and it served me well. I still have that shirt, by the way.
I hope you've washed it since then.
I have washed it. It smells good.
Okay, great.
It doesn't fit, but it smells good.
How close-knit was it that first season with the gang? Was it feeling each other out, or was there a chemistry?
There was chemistry from the get-go. I don't know how we were so blessed. A lot of us were unknowns, you know? The only people who were somewhat famous, and LeVar obviously had done Roots, and Will had been on Stand By Me. And the rest of us were actors looking for a gig. And the gig that we got changed our lives. So we were very grateful. And frankly, we worked we worked 80 hours a week. And then we were so excited about it that we got together on the weekend, much to our significant other's chagrins, I must add.
Well, the set of Next Generation was kind of legendary for its, shall we say, rowdiness?
Yes, it was insanity. It upset more than one director. We were like, it was like herding cats.
Well, that gets me to the next question. Speaking of directing, that actually has become the major part of your life now. When did that bug hit you?
I started to shadow the directors about midway through the first season when I realized that there was going to be an awful lot of sitting around on this job. And I'm a little more active than that. I also took a look and thought that, frankly, the best job in the set is the director, who's involved in every shot and every decision. And I'm very thankful. I'm thankful, obviously, to Rick Berman for giving me the opportunity. But I'm thankful to the cast, who was very supportive. In the third season, they finally gave me a shot. And I was so wonderfully overprepared that it has been, it's the best job. And I'm better at it than I ever was as an actor. And I'm quite grateful that I learned another craft.
Well, that first episode you did, that was a great episode, too. That was the one where Data built his own daughter, right?
Called The Offspring, yes.
Well, I will say you did direct one of my all-time favorite episodes. I know this is probably a fan favorite that you get asked about a lot. But
what's that?
Cause and Effect, where you got to blow up the Enterprise 4 different times.
I'll tell you a little bit about Cause and Effect. At this point, I think it was season 4, season 5. I'm not sure what season it was in. But Brandon Braga, who wrote that, you know, we'd become friends. And I thought that he sent this script down. I thought it was a joke that each act was the same. And they said, no, it was like a directing exercise. You just have to find a way to shoot each act differently. It is a fan favorite, oddly enough.
When you did it, obviously you must have done the card game 4 in a row and then done Dr. Crusher in her room 4 times in a row. That was the way it went, right?
Yeah, that's the way it went, but you had to design different shots to start the scene, different shots to transition in and out of the scene, and then hopefully you'd use different bits of coverage, different sizes on the close-ups and the two shots, so that the objective always is never to repeat shots, and we did a pretty good job. We got pretty handy at it, but it was an interesting challenge because the staging was generally the same, so it was really up to the cinematography to change how the story was told.
Did you make sure you got episodes where Riker didn't appear very much in the episode?
No, the actuality is that it's easier if Riker or whoever is directing and acting at the same time doesn't appear in the episode before, meaning the prep of the episode during which you're prepping, which is the 7 shooting days before you start shooting, so that you can actually prepare to shoot. It's easier to be on stage and act and direct than it is to be prepping during an episode that you're heavy in.
That's interesting.
I'm learning. You learn something every day.
I'm learning. It's a damn poor day when you don't learn something new. You've done, of course, all of the Star Trek series except the original. When did you start getting involved with other TV series? When you were done with Next Generation and then were you out looking for gigs?
I was reaching out, and it's like acting and, well, almost anything. Writing, all these things, you get pigeonholed. And Leonard Nimoy, I believe, is credited with, it's better to be typecast than not to be cast at all. But as a director, I was typecast as a sci-fi guy or a green screen guy or an action guy or whatever that genre was. It was a bit of a struggle to get considered for other jobs, and I was fortunate enough. And now, ironically, my best gigs are on Star Trek shows. I'm doing Discovery and hope to do Picard, and I'm doing Seth's show, The Orville, and I do The Gifted, which is an X-Men show. So I'm back in the genre from which I fought my way away.
I was going to ask about The Orville. What's it like being on that set, which is kind of like Star Trek-ish?
It's more than kind of like. Seth MacFarlane, who's obviously a genius and a Renaissance man, is a huge Next Gen fan and hired Brannon Braga, just mention him again. He's the DP and writer on the show. Marvin Rush, who's a cinematographer on the show, was on our show. James Conway and Robbie Duncan McNeil and myself, who all directed the show. And now he's casting Marina's in the episode that I directed this season. And I see Bob Picardo and John Billingsley were on the show. I mean, he does not pretend that it's not an homage to this show that he's been so fond of. So it's actually great to be on that set.
You mentioned the new Picard show. How far along is that?
It is in. The writers are breaking the scripts as we speak. And I read that it's due to air in December of this year, December of 2019.
Oh, wow. That's kind of quick. You're coming to Pensacon, which we like to think of is the best little con in the South. Oh,
it sure is. I'm going through the guest list. I mean, Shatner's here.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
We had
Tuco, who I adore, is here. Trisha Helfer, Mary McDonnell. I mean, there's a lot of my buddies are in. It's going to be good. Steven Weber. It's a great lineup. It's a really eclectic lineup. Jeffrey Combs, Alan Oppenheimer, who's delightful. This is a very eclectic gathering. That's a lot of guests, too.
Now, what do fans usually want from you at cons? What do they ask?
I'll tell you what. My experience, I've been doing these for 31 years, maybe more, 32 years. What I believe fans want is contact. I mean, they come, they get an autograph, they get a photo op, they ask questions, obviously, but they want to have contact, and if they feel comfortable, they'll share with you something about the show, because they've obviously chosen to spend their hard-earned money to come and see you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I've always felt my responsibility is to give the fans some kind of positive memory of having come to this convention and spent their time and money to do it. It's the great joy of doing them. I mean, it's fun to see your friends. It's fun to make some money. But the real joy is in watching and listening to the stories. I chose to be an astronaut because the only time that I ever had really good contact with my dad was when we watched Next Gen, or when I was in Kuwait. We had DVDs of the show, and it helped us get through a horrible time. These stories you hear, and they're so heartfelt, and they're so accurate, and they're so honest that it makes it really makes the convention.
Yeah, you've been a part of their lives for, 30 years. That's something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I have one more question. It's the nerdiest question I could come up with.
Let's have it.
Looking at your IMDb page, Fantasy Island with Ricardo Montalban, you played a character named Kirk.
No.
Kirk Wendover was your character's name. Please tell me Ricardo said Kirk.
Oh, no, I wish I remembered. That would be a great story. No, that was my first job in L.A. Don DeFore played my father. My wife was played by an actress named Christopher Norris, and her mother was played by Anne Francis. So that was the foursome that landed on the island.
Your name was Kirk. So there you go.
My name was Kirk. There we go. You're doing some deep digging into the weeds there.
Jonathan Frakes will be a guest at Pensacon 2019, February 22nd through 24th at the Bay Center and all over town. You can hear our full conversation on our website, wwf.org. Bob Barrett, WWF News.